and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of February 17th, 2020. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Ms. Mariah Tinger?
I am very well. How are you?
Good, good. It's actually, to everyone, I just said Tinger. It's Tinger. E-G-E-R. And my Massachusetts accent, I'm sure, is not...
I love it.
Comes through.
I'll take
Ms.
it.
Tinger.
Tinger.
Tinger. Anyway, so Mariah, we have a somewhat, it's not geeky. There's a slightly geeky, once you get through a little bit of geekiness, you into a more philosophical discussion about the meaning of life and what we're talking about. But let's start with the tough part first. As we've talked about on this show, the international IPCC makes projections.
Intergovernmental Planet, Intergovernmental Panel for Climate Change,
right.
IPCC.
IPCC. They publish these reports that say, oh my God, in 10 years, we have to cut down our greenhouse gas emissions by 50%. Right? And that's a famous one that we have talked about a lot. That begs the question, is how does the IPCC know that? Well, the IPCC knows that because scientists have done what are called climate models that project the temperature and the consequences of global warming. The models are complicated. They're highly mathematical. They run on a computer. They basically compute the weather every day for 100 years or so, and then they do it again with slightly different starting conditions, and they average it. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. I mean, really interesting, but not the topic of what we want to talk about today. But there's a computer model that does the calculation that the IPCC eventually reports out. So if you have a computer model, then the next question that you have to answer is, what's the input to the computer model? What information do you give the computer in order to do this sophisticated calculation? Right, in other words, we know that there's mathematical equations, but what numbers are you sticking into those equations? And that's where the current issue has popped up. It's the input to the climate models has been called into question a little bit, or at least people have talked about it, and we're talking about it because it's a bit of an issue. The three-letter acronym, the TLA, is something called the Representative Concentration Pathway, or RCP. So what the scientists have done is to try to do the following thing. I mean, if you need to project how much carbon dioxide is going to be in the atmosphere and how hot it's going to be in the year 2050 or 2080, you must make assumptions. Right? You have to make assumptions about what's the global population, right? How much energy does each of those people on the globe use? Where is that energy coming from? Right? Is it coming from coal? Is it coming from solar panels? So there's a huge variation in the kind of future that you can imagine. The long and short of it is that the scientists, they don't choose a single future thing. They say, gee, we can imagine a couple things. We can imagine a future where all the good guys win and green energy becomes dominant. And here's how fast. By 2030, we're at 50%. By 2050, we got 100% clean energy. And that's an RCP, Representative Concentration Pathway. That's the input to the model. This is, oh, things are good. We have a green path to the future. There's an alternate model that says, oh, we don't do anything. The world does not do anything, does not constrain coal, it doesn't build any wind turbines, it does nothing, in which case the carbon dioxide level is very high because we have a lot of dirty energy and a lot of people, and that's a different representative, an RCP, a different pathway with much higher carbon concentrations and a consequently much higher temperature rise. And then you can imagine intermediate pathways, right? So, Mariah, can I put you on? List up, there are four different things. I mean, do you have that in front of you? Or do I have, I mean, I've got notes here, but.
Yeah, I mean, so the basically, if we go with the mitigation required to meet the Paris Agreement goals, that would be the RCP, I think that's, is that 2.6 or maybe that's 1.9.
Okay.
Well, I guess there's also SSP1s, but yeah, so that's 2.6. So that's saying, you know, we're trying to meet the Paris goals. We're trying to keep it under trying to keep temperature rise under 2 degrees Celsius, or ideally at 1.5 degrees Celsius, which we're pretty close to right now. And that's pretty, you know, doing a lot of regulation, a lot of policies and so on and so forth. And then we have modest mitigation, which is going to be RCP 4.5, and that's about a 2.5 degrees Celsius rise, and weak mitigation, which is about a three degrees Celsius rise. And then we have, let's see, the average, if there's no policies, which is about, I think that's RCP 6, and that would be maybe about a 4 degrees Celsius rise. And then the worst case, they call it, which sometimes is called business as usual, but that's actually incorrect. It's the worst case if no policies are put in place. And the reason it's not really business as usual is because we've already moved, our business as usual has already moved us away from coal just by, because of the market, and you know, natural gas has outcompeted coal and replaced it. Yeah. And let's say that we hope that there's been some activists who have helped, you know, but that's 5 degrees Celsius. And I really like the Catherine Hayhoe, you know, you're sort of like, well, so what's the difference between 1.5 and 5 degrees Celsius, right? Catherine Hayhoe uses the analogy of body temperature. And if you have a fever of, you know, 99.9, well, that's not great, but it's not really, you know, it's not terrifying. But if you have a fever of 103.5, 103.6, then you're worried. Then you're going to the emergency room.
Right.
So I think that gives you kind of a better scope than just thinking of it as, you know, 5 degrees Celsius.
Right.
So what's the big deal, right?
But I mean,
those different
things that you described are the four different inputs to four different kind of calculations that tell you what's the temperature, what's the behavior in the future if we follow a green path, the first one, or what's the temperature in the future if we do, if we don't do anything, right? These are different calculations, and those are all laid out in the models. So I guess so that's the background. What has come up recently is the following idea, and Mariah, you just alluded to it, is that because of the because of the march of time and humanity working on stuff, the worst case scenario has been incorporated into many models, right? So this is called the RCP 8.5. We don't have to go into why, but that's the representative concentration pathway. That's the worst case. That's been used a lot to show us what could happen if we do nothing. The argument has come up recently but in fact, we have done something, right? We are shutting down coal plants. We don't see so many coal plants being built into the next 20 or 30 years. I mean, that's just is now the new sort of worst case projection. And so that we have to be careful about using a worst case projection from, as it happens, from like 2010, a 10-year-old projection, making all these momentous decisions. And in fact, the IPCC is revising all of these sort of models, so that for the next release of the next thing in 2022, they're going to have different improved projections of the future. But the question is the conclusions that we've reached using this this worst case assumption about the future, is that fair? Are we kidding ourselves, right? Is it less bleak than we thought, or do we need to maintain that sort of worst case scenario as something that is the bear in the closet, so to speak, that keeps us disciplined and focused on getting on the Paris Accord path? Does that make any sense, Mariah?
Well, I mean, I think so. Of course, you know, whatever it does to us psychologically, obviously the scientific facts are what we want to stick to when we're creating these scenarios. And to your point, there's a couple of scientists who came out recently that said, you know, actually, we don't think it is going to be 5 degrees Celsius of rise. And that's caused a whole kerfluffle in the Twitterverse of people saying kind of what you're saying. You know, okay, enough with this. We don't know if this is true. We can't really project if it's going to be 5 degrees Celsius or not. And, you know, by putting this report out, which Michael Mann actually said that the Michael Mann is the scientist who created the hockey stick graph, which shows this precipitous rise of temperatures. And Michael Mann said that there was no scientific review on this article that is sort of saying, well, it actually won't be as bad as 5 degrees if we continue along the way of not having any policies for climate change. Mm-hmm. So he called it basically an opinion piece.
Right.
But I think that gets to your point of, the psychological ramifications of saying, well, if we don't make any policies and we're only going to get to 3, how does that make us feel? Does that make us more or less motivated to act on climate action? Are we sort of like, well, so it only gets to 3 degrees. Okay.
We get some time.
Yeah, that's not awful. You know, yes, the low-lying Pacific Island nations will be completely disappeared. And yes, we'll have a lot of,
But it won't be 5 degrees.
It won't be 5 degrees. And I mean, to that point, the authors say, look, we're not saying that just because it won't get up to 5 degrees doesn't mean it's not still a big problem. There's, at 3 degrees, we're still going to have, forest fires and deadly heat waves and crop failures and all these other things. So they're not trying to say we shouldn't worry about it because it's only 3 degrees Celsius. They're just saying, look, we've taken a closer look at the models and we think that perhaps the models are missing some pieces that might make it a lower cap.
I think those people who write the article, maybe they're acting in good faith, but in this day and age, there are people who are not going to act in good faith and are going to take this to say, oh, the models are all pointless. It's not as bad as they thought. You don't have to worry so much. We don't really need that wind turbine, right?
That's already been done. Yep.
Weaponized against the climate movement.
Yep, it has already been weaponized against the climate movement. There doesn't have to be doubt. You just have to create the appearance of doubt, right? Mm-hmm. So, it's easy to say, look, they figured out it's not as bad as they thought. So who knows? Maybe they'll find, right? I mean,
right.
They can say, maybe they can find out more.
How do you know?
It's not even climate changing, right? Yeah. You can just dial it back.
Right.
I think that the biggest missing piece, and I don't know if the IPCC report will, 2022 report will include this, but the melting permafrost causes these really big positive feedback loops where as the permafrost melts, which of course it is doing as the climate warms, it's going to release significant amounts of methane, which of course cause more warming to occur. And that none of the scenarios we just talked about include that positive feedback loop. That amount of warming is not in any of the models that are in the IPCC reports. And so I think you could argue on the flip side, sure, maybe some of our models are missing some things that might make the projection lower, but maybe they're missing some things that might make the projection higher too.
Right. Right.
These are just models. We don't really know what's going to happen, but we have a pretty good sense it's not going to be good.
And I think that for the purposes of people listening, I mean, we need to have some sophistication about how these things are arrived at, right? You need to. It helps to know that there are people who are making assumptions about what the future will be. And what did Yogi Berra say, right? It's tough to make predictions, especially about the future, right? Nobody knows what's going to happen. So you have to make these assumptions and that we should understand what's in them and what's not in them, to your point. I mean, I completely agree that for somebody to get up and say, well, your worst case scenario is no longer the worst case, you can come back and say, well, yeah, put in these tipping points and you'll be right back to a worst case scenario. In fact, some of these intermediate, in quotation marks, scenarios talk about how, things could be worse if nationalistic governments decide to become more powerful and decide they want to build coal after all, screw everybody else, right? They're going to build coal. Right. So, I mean, there's so many variables out there as to what might happen in the future. I mean, that's not to say that you can't make a reasonable estimate. So what the IPCC is doing now is they're not throwing out the old data because it's all legitimate. All these assumptions are legitimate, but they're working to continue to revise these scenarios for future emissions based, as I said, on population growth, energy usage, all those kind of things, to always keep refining them. And as climate hawks, we need to be, you know, happy that the scientists, as I think you said before, Mariah, I mean, we want to be scientifically accurate, right? You want to put in as much as you can into the model and know what you didn't put in so you can judge the validity of what comes out. And I think when you do that, as you said, it's still going to be really bad at 1.5 degrees, right? And we're nowhere near even getting to the 1.5 degree pathway yet. So,
yeah, and you know, I always kind of come back to, well, why are we clinging so tightly to the horse and buggies, right? I mean, obviously this is not the horse and buggies, but at whatever, 100 years ago, that was our method of transportation. Mm-hmm. And then the Model T Ford came along and it changed the way we do things at the time for the better. And now we're at the cusp of the same sort of revolution where we can have, you know, to me, would you rather be stuck, you know, next to the tailpipe of a electric vehicle or one that was chugging out carbon monoxide? And obviously cleaner vehicles, cleaner energy, cleaner infrastructure, all of this, we have the technology. It makes so much sense to be doing it. And, you know, whether or not climate change is a follow-on from carbon dioxide emitting vehicles and, you know, processes, agriculture, all these things, it seems to me like we're ready for this transition to a cleaner energy world.
There's a new world being born. I completely agree.
Yeah.
But I get, I mean, the point of discussing this is to say that we might hear chatter around the edges about the fringes of the most extreme cases of the modeling, right? How they're either worse or not as bad as we thought. I mean, the bottom line is that even in the more optimistic cases, it's still going to be very bad, so we need to maintain our discipline and urgency. But at the same time, I think it's interesting that, as we said before, there's a reason that the quote-unquote worst-case expectations may have changed, because we have done a lot. The solar panels are dropping in price. People are protesting coal plants. I mean, all these things are happening, right? So take those into account. We should be proud of the fact that, you know, maybe climate activists have bent the curve a little bit. That's a good thing.
Yeah, right, absolutely.
All right, so what we'll do is we'll put up links to these incredibly geeky articles for your consideration, dear listener. It's useful to try to slog through them. I mean, they're not always that easy, but it's informative. I hope you get a chance to do that. We'll put up links at the website. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have questions about your favorite representative concentration pathway, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we should be talking about. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or all of the modern podcast distribution apps. I want to thank D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to say that we're going to close where we always close, that by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of those things, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, thank you for being here tonight and talking about representative concentration pathways.
I love it. I'll talk about any geeky topic that has to do with climate change you want to.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.